American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! It's Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Monday, January 5th, 2009. A whole new year, a whole new life, a whole new world for us WOGs. And you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Separate Up on Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today and every day, and has been doing so for more than 10 years. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are adding to that legacy. You can follow up on all these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to Sean, S-E-A-N underscore Kennedy dot livejournal.com. And this could be a free broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, W1Y, Media Network, KJAC Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Non-Surveyam Radio, Osprey Networks, CreekRadio.net, Radio Red Mercury, and let's not forget the Ultimate Rocket Balls Elite for the Beast every Thursday. That's right, you go to Second Life Node Archers, 1-557-4666, and that is where we all hang out, being cool, there inside of Second Life. And of course, inside of Second Life, if you choose to go there and actually check that out, it's become a disturbing trend lately that I noticed there is more and more super awesome cyberpunk chicks hanging out with me. Yes, sex sells. Come to Node Archers at 7. Ha ha! Ha ha! Look at that subtle manipulation there. Anyway, never mind the gaiety. Let's get on to some feedback. Yo, Sean, you're back. Your last show, you were talking about crap that people buy that costs loads of money that has no use. Actually, I guess you talk about that all your time. It's one of your constant themes. Well, I try to save people money. That's what I do. Basically, people are just buying this stuff because they feel owning such things confers some status to them. Like fancy wheels on your car is a way for you to indicate your membership to a specific elite subculture. Or having a certain expensive purse is a way of showing off how rich you are or how refined your tastes are. But that's just basic human nature. I mean, 20,000 years ago, people would be bragging about how big a bone they can stick through their piercing in their nose, or maybe they'd be showing off their amazing collection of ivory mother goddess figurines. Which is true. I mean, you know, you'd have the total, who's got the biggest feathers in their cap, and which hut had the best, style, thingy on the front door, or whatever, you know, feathers, or whatever, you know. So it's all about status, Sean. There's a good book by two Canadians, Andrew Potter and Joseph Heath, called The Rebel Cell, Why Culture Can't Be Jammed. And they're going into detail about why Callie Lason is doomed to sell out just like punk sold out, because they're both commodities that people use to indicate their membership to elite groups. I always like to put you forward as a great counterexample to their theory. After all, you're always dressing nondescript, even if you're cutting all the labels off your clothes to make sure nobody can tell what consumer tribe you belong to. How can that be sold? How can anyone make money off of it? Anyway, good for you. Keep up the good work, Yoda of Borg. Which is kind of funny because his name is a collective name as well. So, you know, I think he's got a lot of valid points, which is true. You know, the whole WOG culture thing is all about being nondescript and blending in a lot of the time. We don't want to draw a lot of attention because we desire to be wise. In order to survive, you must be wise. Courageous, but wise. So, it's smart to, you know, be aware of that. No, sort yourself out this week. I guess people don't like my advice. But, you know, if you want advice on stuff, send it in. I will do it in the sort yourself out section of the show. Let's get into the news. In pharma fascist news, big story in 2009 was pharma fascism, and now the wireheading is back up because they don't have to do as much testing with wireheading as they do with drugs, which, I mean, that's pretty sad when you consider they basically do little or no testing with drugs, and now, you know, for the wireheading thing, they can do it with whatever. But it's coming out in mainstream news. People are realizing that, yes, pharma fascism is a bad thing, and thanks very much to Altrux for sending in this particular news link. Psychiatry is nothing more than a well-funded front for Big Pharma, according to lawmakers investigating the field's premier organization, the American Psychiatric Association. Unlike psychologists, psychiatrists can write prescriptions, giving pharmaceutical companies a powerful incentive to lavishly subsidize both their lifestyle and profession. Nearly a third of the association's $62 million budget comes from Big Pharma. So, you gotta see, like, one-third comes from one source of, you know, revenue. Obviously, they're gonna side with that. Which also showers individual practitioners with lucrative consultation fees. The problem isn't the profession lacks adequate ethic guidelines or regulations, it's that some psychiatrists simply ignore the rules. As a group, psychiatrists earn less in base salary than any other specialist, according to a nationwide survey by the Medical Group Management Association. In 2007, median compensation for psychiatrists was $198,653, less than half of the $464,420 earned by diagnostic radiologists, and barely more than the $190,000 earned by doctors practicing internal medicine. What, are you kidding me? You're upset with $198,000 a year? But psychiatrists supplement this income with consulting arrangements with drug makers, traveling the country to give dinner talks about drugs or other doctors' fees, generally ranging from $750 to $3,500 per event. While data on industry consulting arrangements are sparse, state officials in Vermont are reporting that in 2007 fiscal year, the drug makers gave more money to psychiatrists than to doctors in any other specialty. 11 psychiatrists in the states received on average $56,944 each. Data from Minnesota, amongst the few others to collect such information, showed a similar trend. In both states, individual psychiatrists are not top earners, but consulting arrangements are so common that their total tops all others. The worry is that money may subtly alter psychiatrists' choices for which drugs to subscribe. Oh, well, or prescribe, rather. Which is, we subscribe, they prescribe. And then pretty soon the whole tribe is screwed. So, you think? Really? You mean that if, you know, the drug companies give the psychiatrists money, that might be a conflict of interest? I don't know. I think it is, quite obviously. You know, I think that it's probably, you know, seems sort of obvious to me that, you know, how can you possibly understand that wouldn't, you know, I swear to God, this is what gives me a nosebleed. You know, everybody knows that they're on the payroll. This isn't, like, a mystery. Well, they say, give me a fucking break, you know? And if you don't think that's pharma fascism, wait for the next one, okay? You know, as crazy as this fucking story is, wait for the next one here. More pharma fascist news. That's from Nashville, Tennessee. Now, this one, you want to talk about some fucked up shit. This here is absolutely insane. Like, totally, totally wacko. You would not believe how crazy this one is. And of all the stories I've covered in a while, this one is one of the worst, okay? While the Metro Police have banned the use of tasers for a time, this is in Nashville, Tennessee now, they still used a controversial method to subdue unruly people, according to an I-Team report. The city's policy is to use a method which calls for an injection of a drug into a person came as a total surprise to people that would most expect to know all about it. For almost 2 years, Metro Police have had the option of calling for a needle loaded with a strong sedative to control the most unruly people they encounter on the street. What? One of the doctors who came up with the protocol said it's the safest option out there, and it's used all over the country. Excuse me? Cops are giving people needles? But many people say the injection was news to them. A top medical ethicist said it's a troubling precedent. The drug is called Midazolam. Midazolam. So Midazolam, which is better known as Versed, V-E-R-S-E-D. People who've had a colonoscopy will probably had a shot of the drug before the procedure. Wow, so if they shove shit up your ass, they give you this drug. The drug has an amnesia effect. Great! And we're using that therapeutically because of the nice ways to take care of the discomfort is make people forget that they've had it. Said a biomedical ethics and law experiment expert, Dr. Stephen Miles, but the shots have also been used on the streets. People said we're out of control. So if I shoot you full of this shit, then, you can't remember if I kicked the shit out of you. Or we get some hooker in there and we shoot her full of this stuff and nine cops gang rape her. She can't figure anybody. One of the first to get the shot administered them was Damon Beasley. Well, that night, I hadn't been properly taking my meds. You know, like I'm supposed to. I got so depressed that when I was up on the bridge running into traffic, back and forth of cars, cars dodging me, swerving, I ended up with two sharp objects in my hands. By that time, the police had arrived. I was charging them with these sharp objects, trying to make them shoot me. Actually, I was yelling at them to shoot me, he said. When the taser didn't work on Beasley, police turned to the brand new protocol, an ejection of Verst. Officers called for an emergency medical personnel for the ejection. I remember them holding me down. There was maybe four or five on each side. I remember they were calling for something, you know. Some guy came up on the left side and hit me with it. He said, I do know that whatever it was works immediately. I mean, you ain't got a chance if you're 300 pounds. It's like horse tranquilizer. I don't care. You're gone. It's a wrap. He said, Beasley had no idea what happened after his injection. I woke up. I don't know how much time had passed. With a sergeant standing over me telling me to sign here. Wow. Sign there for what? You know, Jesus Christ. I didn't know what I was signing. MS Channel 41, Miss Kalamatos. I just signed a piece of paper which was immediately right back out. He said, Kalamatos, this is what the guy said who got hit with the stuff. This Kalamatos, the person who was reporting all this, reported that Beasley ended up in the Metro General Hospital and was put into psychiatric care. He was not charged with the incident on the bridge, but Beasley's lawyer, a public defender, had no idea that Verst had been used to subdue him until Kalamatos told him about it. Very few people seem to know about the almost two-year-old policy, Kalamatos said. The state's largest mental health advocacy group, Nashville's mental health judge, the Nashville Rescue Mission, and the American Civil Liberties Union all said they had no knowledge of the use of the drug by the cops. So, wow. You know, trank darts. I mean, yeah, absolutely. What if you load this up inside of a paintball gun? What if you load this up, mix it up with some DMSO, and start smoking people with it? Holy crap. What if you made it an aerosol and started fogging down protests? You know, so that no one was really sure what happened there. You know, it's kind of hard to see. I've talked to my colleagues all around the country, and none of the people from the south to the north to the east to the west have ever heard of this kind of program. I've never heard of this, and trust me, like, if some shit like this was going on, we should know about it. This is kind of used, where they basically force an ejection upon an individual, knowing nothing about his or her medical condition, said ACLU Director Hedy Weiberg. I can't tell you why those individuals don't know about it, said Dr. Corey Slovish, Nashville's Emergency Medical Director. Along with the medical examiner, Dr. Bruce Levy, Slovis customized a Verst policy for Nashville that is endorsed by a group of emergency medical experts called the Eagles, not the Hotel California guys. It's something that in the medical community and the EMS medical community is very common. It's a given. When I surveyed the major metropolitan areas around the country, I think only two cities were not actively using it. What? Slovis said. Some of them had asked questions about potential problems. Miles said he'd never heard of Verst being used this way. There's no research guideline. There is no validated protocol for this. There's not even a clear set of indications for when this is to be used, except when people are agitated. By saying it's done by emergency medical personnel, they're basically trying to have it both ways. That is, they're trying to use a medical protocol that is not validated, and not for police function, validated for police function, arrest, and detention. Miles said the decision to administer a Verst is based purely on the paramedic decision, not a police decision. Well, that's happy horse shit, because the cops are the ones telling it's going on. You know what I mean? If it's up to an officer to call an ambulance and determine if a person is in a condition called excited delirium. I don't know. I spend most of my life that way, actually. I don't know if I would use the word diagnosing, but they are assessing the situation and saying, this person's not acting rationally. This is something I've been trained to recognize. This seems like excited delirium. I don't view delirium in this field as a police function. It's a medical emergency. We're giving the drug Verst that is routinely used in thousands of healthcare settings across the country and in the field by trained paramedics. And also, it turns off your mind. It's a black chopper. It's one of those kind of things that just kind of gets rid of the whole, you know, annoying memory fingerprinting thing. I view what we're doing as the best possible medical practice to a medical emergency, Slovis said. Metro government would not release the names of eight other people who got Verst injections after police calls. A representative from Metro said that the information was protected in the way a medical record would be. The representative said only one person out of nine had shown no improvement after the injection. Verst was most recently used on a female in early June. Three women of childbearing age have apparently gotten shocks without consent, even though the package insert for reverse suggests that the patient should be appraised of the potential hazard to the fetus. A single administration to calm a wildly delirious patient down, even if she's pregnant, is much safer to the woman and her unborn child than being allowed to be delirious, hypothermic, hyperventilating, and perhaps hypoxic, Slovis said. I would think that with enough people being able to tackle a person to inject them, there should be another way to try to subdue someone without putting an injection into their vein, Weinberg said. This is the ACLU chick. The biggest side effect that is seen in more than 80% of those who are injected with FIRST is amnesia. Oh, what a handy side effect that is. The side effect raises the question of a person being able to defend themselves in court if they're asked to remember what happened. If they would have said, I'd done anything after that shot, hey, I couldn't have argued that fact, I don't remember. Beasley said to Calamos reporter while doing the research on this report, she found a post on paramedics' internet chat site that said, one thing to think about FIRST is that the patient won't remember how she got that footprint on their chest. We're very careful in Nashville, Slova said. Every incident of FIRST is both reviewed under the medical director, myself, and the head of the EMS quality assurance. We make sure our paramedics treat patients right. You know, I'll bet you do. I'll bet you do. Miles said that it would have been appropriate to put the idea of using FIRST before what's called an institutional review board for a study of how to anticipate the problem before they pop up. It may well be that a protocol could be designed to test the use of FIRST in handling agitated persons at the time of detention. Anyway, you know, what we got here is we got cops giving people needles that takes away their memory. That's at the end of the day, when you cut all the crap, that's what you're actually dealing with. So, yeah, that's, and you gotta understand that everything's craziness now, right? I mean, hell, if you look at dirty pictures on the internet, suddenly you're some sort of internet predator, right? I mean, that's the whole deal. We're all a bunch of psychotic perverts hanging out in here. You know, I mean, that's the way they're trying to portray everything. So obviously, if you spend more than 3 or 4 hours on the internet, you're addicted to it. Therefore, you're neurotic. Therefore, you're mentally unstable. And oh my God, I've got a sharp pain in my ass. But that's okay. I won't remember it. I'll just wake up with, two black eyes, wet, confused, and sticky, with a burning sensation. And, you know, I'll try to just carry on and hopefully I won't die. And, you know, as well, maybe I won't get tasered by my shock collar and be taken back to my ATCO trailer, you know, metal casing, ecologically friendly green zone that I live in. I don't know about you, man, but that doesn't really seem like a good idea to me. Mind you, everybody's going that way. Everybody's going that way. Down under, the things are getting really crazy. The Great Firewall of Australia, things are getting nuts down there, man. In server news from down under, this was sent in by RU46, two of the country's major internet providers say the government appears unlikely to meet its own deadline for trials of mandatory internet filtering. So, you know, they're having some problems getting this internet filtering up. Like, they're having difficulty with that stuff. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. I'm glad they're having problems with that because it'll, you know, it kind of slows it down. But I do think it is on the way. China's got it happening, and everybody's modeling after China. The government planned to begin trials before Christmas, but iNet and Optus said they have not heard back from the government about their applications to take part. iNet's chief operating officer, Mark White, has told Radio National he is skeptical about plans to filter the net. Sure, he could be skeptical about it. It could all just be a big plant. We don't actually know. You know, it's kind of difficult to see who's actually telling the truth, who's saying what. You know, you never know. We absolutely endorse their intention, but we don't agree with the proposed solution. We believe it's not going to work. It's as simple as that. There's a whole range of techniques, rather than just looking at URLs, that people can use. Rotating IP addresses, a whole range of things. And so it's really not going to solve the problem. However, you know, they're going to come up with something that will solve the problem. And that's why we have to start looking at what we can do to protect our own internet freedoms, to protect our freedom of speech, all that kind of stuff. Very, very good idea to look after that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? But, of course, you know, people always want the bread and circus. And I got this story out of Thailand, which is just, there's a ridiculous picture that goes with it. And this is, you know, I guess where people are at. This is what people are thinking about. Let me see if I can get through this one. This one was sent in by Malcav. In Happy Cop News. Now imagine this. This is a Jello Biafra album cover. If ever I saw one, okay? Let me see if I can get this one off. In its latest version of the famous Thai smile, okay, which is I guess there's a smile, which is the Thai smile, right? So when you're in Thailand, I guess when you ride around on the motorcycles, they got these kind of anti-smog masks they wear. They're like look like surgical masks or whatever. So in its latest versions of the famous Thai smile, motorcycle cops with a have a bright red goofy grin painted on the side of their white anti-pollution masks. So they're wearing the mask and it's got this crazy clown smile on it, and they're cops riding around on motorbikes with clown face paint, you know, on their anti-pollution masks. Now, that to me seems pretty goddamn Akira, you know? I'm just saying. For the first week of the year, and longer if people seem to be smiling back, highway policemen in Thailand will wear masks to lift the mood of motorists. It wouldn't lift my mood, it would scare the hell out of me. For our highway policemen, we have the policy that the police must be friendly and smiling all the time. But the problem is, when we're tired, it's hard to keep smiling, said Colonel Somus Promium, a highway police commander. It's been a rough year in Thailand, with revolving governments, restless mobs, and week-long takeover of Bangkok's airports that frighten away tourists from the country that keeps calling itself the Land of Smiles. They have to put on a mask because a smile doesn't come naturally anymore, said Amma Simwa, an economist who keeps a close eye on the morals of his countrymen. Normally people smile, but you don't have to put on a smiley mask. But these past few years, the smile has worn thin, because we're all angry at each other and willing to show it. It's a complicated thing, the Thai smile. As varied, nuanced, as eloquent as the bow in Japan. It apparently requires just as many muscles. Foreign visitors are charmed, but the truth is, it can often be as difficult to know what is behind the Thai smile as it is to guess the real expression of a police officer hiding behind the smiley mask. Happiness or sadness, regret or anticipation, triumph or embarrassment, warmth or wickedness, the important thing, and apparently sometimes the hardest thing nowadays, is to just keep on smiling. Earlier this month, a leading polling agency, ABAC, spent 3 days questioning 2,079 people in the Bangkok area. If they found that on a scale of 1 to 10, people gave Thailand only 5.77 points for being the land of smiles. People are not smiling enough. Now the fact they actually did that just made me kind of, you know, that's bizarre. This whole thing strikes me as just semi-psychotic, you know. People forget to smile, you know, said Krita Kong Sompong, a professor of business who for years was Thailand's public curmudgeon as the grim host of the television import The Weakest Link. I think with better training we can do a better job, she said, noting that the customer service company had given its employees mirrors which practiced their smiles. Here's a mirror, go smile in it. Training should always be the top categories for anybody. Jesus Christ! Aren't we worried about this here? Like, smiling? Come on! In dour Singapore, where social engineering is often attempted by fiat, people walked around smiling for a while. A few years back, in response to a campaign called Smile Singapore. In Japan, where people can sometimes get carried away by the seriousness of life, workers have been trained to hold a chopstick in their teeth to produce the living equivalent of a smiling emoticon. Holy shit, is that ever crazy! This is like the craziest shit ever. Now Thailand is attempting to live once again to what might be the national motto. By the way, the musical Bye Bye Birdie, just put on a happy face, put on a happy face, put on a happy face. Starting on his new administration, the already embattled Prime Minister Abhis Vijiva, the fourth Prime Minister this year, made a promise to his people this month. I will prove that once again Thailand can be the land of the free, the land of opportunities, and the land of smiles. The beatings will continue until morale improves. The highway police seem to be a good place as any to start. The new cloth masks, which will hook behind the ears and cover the mouth and nose, will help reduce the stress from drivers when they see the police, Sonoma said, the highway police commander. To that end, he said some 200 police booths would also be distributing holy water, chewing gum, and mints. Holy water? I mean, not that I'm against cops having holy water. You never know. You're going along, come across some major demons, bam! Cut the holy water. He defended his force when asked why drivers needed smiley masks and gum and holy water to calm down when approached by a patrolman. The police are not that scary, he said. When I was in the United States, the highway police seemed to be much more fierce than Thai police. I was scared of them. Well, I think everybody's scared of highway cops in the States. You know, they're kind of tough. You know, they have to deal with a lot of tough problems, a lot of crazy people with guns. You know, they gotta be, you know, the traffic stop is, whatever. I mean, but, you know, if you want to give, you know, these cops riot shield masks with big clown faces on them, I think that would be, Well, if nothing else, it'd be an outstanding photo opportunity. But in Canada, where things have started to go more and more insane, we have a story sent in by a kid with Jedi powers about science being terrorism. And this is all, I reported on a story about a guy who had a pretty extensive chemical lab in his house, and the cops went in there, kicked in his door, make sure he was not, you know, some kind of psycho building bombs and that. And I could almost see that, because he did have a lot of chemicals and stuff, but now it's starting to get a little bit crazy. Where if you ask the wrong questions or you got the wrong equipment, you got bomb-making supplies. Well, I promise you, every single house in the world's got bomb-making supplies in it. Look under your sink. Chemical cleaners. Oh my God, he's a terrorist. But listen to this one here. A Canadian college student majoring in chemistry built himself a home lab. Good for you. And discovered that trying to do science in your own home quickly leads to accusations of drug-making and terrorism. Lewis Casey, an 18-year-old in Saskatchewan, which, believe you me, which is what I call Saskatchewan, because if you ever go to Saskatchewan, there is nothing to do there. So yeah, I was gonna get into some science, move to Saskatchewan, you got nothing else to focus on but your work. But anyway, he built a small chemistry lab in his family's garage near the university where he studies. Then, 2 weeks ago, police arrived at his home with a search warrant based on a quick survey of his lab, determined it was a meth lab. They pulled Casey out of the shower to interrogate him, and then they arrested him. What the hell? A few days later, police admitted that Casey's lab wasn't a meth lab, but they kept him in jail, claiming that it had some of the materials less necessary to produce explosives. Friends and neighbors wrote dozens of letters to the court, testifying that Casey was innocent, merely a student who was really enthusiastic about chemistry. On December 24th, Casey was finally released into his parents' custody, pending a trial to determine whether or not he was building what police called improvised explosives devices. Holy shit. Yesterday, Casey's lawyer told journalists that my client is a very intelligent young man, he's very keen in chemistry, and a very curious young person, very capable, very knowledgeable in the area, and I was always curious with regard to chemistry, chemical compounds, chemical reactions, that kind of thing. So from my client's point of view, he's completely innocent insofar as he had no intention of creating any explosives or explosive devices. As people probably know, anything in your house can constitute or be used in chemical explosive devices, including sugar and cleaning compounds, Mr. Clean, bleach detergents, all those sorts of things. It is unclear what made police raid Casey's house. They claim they got a tip from a woman who sold Casey fertilizer and was concerned about it. Certain kinds of fertilizer are used in the production of crystal meth. Holy crap. The case is reminiscent of the Steve Kurtz case in 2004. Kurtz is a New York artist who used biotech equipment in his work. Police arrested him of terrorism after discovering a home chemistry lab. Casey is now living at home, but he's no longer allowed to engage in chemistry experiments except under supervision of school labs. He is required to inform the chemistry department of the charges against him. His trials continues on 26th of January. So that's great. I mean, this poor kid, he's trying to get an education, you know. This is a stark example of how scientific curiosity is still regarded with science with suspicion, even in an era where home labs are becoming more and more common. Good luck to Casey. Let's hope his next lab is even bigger and cooler than the one he recently lost. Well, you know, and is his parents going to be cool with that? I mean, there's a lot of people who would be really freaked out if the cops kicked in my door. If the cops kicked in my door, went into my little shop here, found all my internet broadcasting books with all my army books. I'm radicalizing people. I'm the leader of the band. I'm the guy who's, you know, oh my God, look at what he's doing. He's a leader, an international ring, a network of, you know, crazy people. Yeah, come on. You can spin that 16 million different ways. You know, it's just bizarre what they're doing. And I think it all comes down to people, to them trying to deny individuals access to information. I think that's what we're talking about here. Now, in Event Horizon news, thank you very much to the Fat Techie. Event Horizon, great movie about a spaceship that wanted to power itself with the power of a black hole. So, you know, this one here isn't really a black hole, but it is a star! They want to build a star on the planet. Let's make a star. What could possibly go wrong? While it seemed an impossible goal for nearly 100 years, scientists now believe they are on the brink of cracking one of the biggest problems in physics by harnessing the power of nuclear fusion, a reaction that burns at the heat of the sun. In the spring, the team will begin attempts to ignite a tiny man-made star inside a laboratory to trigger a thermonuclear reaction. Again, what could possibly go wrong? Its goal is to generate a temperature of more than 100 million degrees Celsius and pressures billions of times higher than those found anywhere else on Earth. Billions of times higher than any. From a speck of fuel, a little bit bigger than a pinhead, if successful, the experiment will mark the first step towards building a practical nuclear fusion power station and source for almost limitless energy. The time when fossil fuel supplies are dwindling and fears about global warming are forcing governments to seek clean energy sources, fusion could provide the answer. Hydrogen, the fuel needed for the fusion reactions, is among the most abundant in the universe. Building work on the $1.2 billion nuclear fusion experiment is due to be completed in the spring. So we got $1.2 billion going into this Let's Make a Star program. Holy crap. Scientists from the National Ignition Facility, NIF, in Livermore, nestled among the wine-producing vineyards in Central California, in California, will use a laser that concentrates 1,000 times the electric generating power of the United States into a billionth of a second. Wow. So, bam! That's quite a, that's a lot of power going to that laser there. That's pretty good. The result should be an explosion in the 32-foot-wide chamber, which will produce at least 10 times the amount of energy that was used to create it. Ha ha ha! So, 10 times, 1,000 times, so that would be 10,000 times the entire electrical generating power of the United States into the billionth of a second. So, we're going to make a really big explosion with the laser. We are creating conditions that exist inside the sun. Well, you don't know that. You don't know that. You don't know. We're... Ed Moses, director of the facility, it's like we're tapping into the real solar energy, as fusion is the source of all energy in the world. It's really exciting physics, but beyond, there are huge social, economic, and global problems it can help solve. Yeah, like, I could see this being used as a weapon. Inside a structure covering an area the size of 3 football pitches, a single infrared laser will be sent through almost a mile of lenses, mirrors, and amplifiers to create a beam more than 100 or more than 10 billion times more powerful than a household light bulb. Housed within a hangar-sized room that has to be pumped clear of dust, preventing impurities from getting into the beam. The laser will then be split into 192 separate beams, converted into ultraviolet light, focused into a capsule at the center of aluminum and concrete-coated target chamber. When the laser beam hit the inside of the capsule, they should generate high-energy X-rays that, within a few billionths of a second, compressed the fuel pellet inside its outer shell blows off. This explosion of the fuel pellet shell produces an equal and opposite reaction that compress the fuel itself together until nuclear fusion begins, releasing vast amount of energy. Scientists have been attempting to harness nuclear fusion since Albert Einstein's equation E=mc², which he derived in 1905, raised the possibility that fusing atoms together could release tremendous amounts of energy. Under Einstein's theory, the amount of energy locked up in 1 gram of matter is enough to power 28,500 100-watt light bulbs for a year! Or more than that, if they were compact fluorescent, according to, you know, his thing. They're probably like double that, probably like 100,000, you know, for like 50 years. Anyway, you understand my point here. Until now, such fusion has only been possible inside of nuclear weapons, and highly unstable plasma has created incredibly strong magnetic fields. The work at Livermore could change all this. The sense of excitement at the facility is clear. In the city itself, people on the street are speaking about the experiment and what it could bring them. Like death at several billion feet per second. Until now, Livermore has only had the dubious honor of being home to the U.S. government's nuclear weapons research laboratories, which are on the same site as the NIF. So, we got this star. We're going to make a small sun on the planet here. What would be the best place to do that? Let's do that where all the nuclear weapons are. Yeah, that's a good idea. Have you got a team of monkeys working on this or what? Inside the facility, scientists are impatient. After 11 years of development work, they want the last of the lenses and mirrors for the laser to be put in place and the tedious task of adjusting and aiming the laser to be over. Yeah, 11 years? Hell yeah. A process they fear could take up to a year before they can successfully achieve fusion. Jeff Wyzoff, a former astronaut who is deputy principal associate director of the science at the NIF, everyone is keen to get started. We have to get the targeting right. Otherwise, it just won't work. And you want to be careful with suns on your planet. Kind of a good idea. We will be firing laser pulses that last a few billions of a second, but we will be creating conditions that are found in the interiors of stars and exploding nuclear weapons. I worked on the building of the International Space Station. This is a far bigger challenge, and the implications are huge. When we started the project, a lot of technology we needed did not exist, so we had to develop it ourselves. The next step is looking at how ignition can be used to deliver some of the value to the world. It has the potential to be one of the biggest achievements mankind has ever made. Well, you know, limitless power would be pretty cool at this time. Although other experiments have attempted to create conditions needed for nuclear fusion, lasers are seen as the most likely technique to be able to provide viable electrical supply. If all goes well, NIF will be able to fire its laser and ignite a fusion reaction every 5 hours. But to create a reliable fusion power plant, the laser would need to ignite fusion around 10 times a second. Well, I mean, if you're putting out like 1,000 times more power than you're taking in, you know, this would be pretty big. The scientists are already working with British counterparts, and next step towards a fusion power station. A project known as the High Powered Laser Research Facility aims to create a laser-powered fusion reactor that can fire once every couple of minutes. Wow. Professor Mike Dunn, director of the Central Laser Facility at Rutherford Appleton Laboratory near Oxford, said, "The National Ignition Facility is finally going to prove that fusion can be achieved with a laser. We'll start an exciting new period in physics that will prove that you're trying to achieve what might actually be possible." Wow. So, hey, fusion, good to see. 2009, Limitless Energy by Building Suns Where We Store Our Nuclear Weapons. Again, what could possibly go wrong? Well, you know, science is good. We like science. It's always positive. We must go forward. We cannot go back. We need to find some sort of a way to look after our society, look after our people, and power is very useful in that. You know, it's makes sense to me. That's all I'm saying. And the other field, of course, that everybody's doing all this research in, aside from drugs and all this other stuff, is with the brain. Everyone wants to have the brain. You know, they want to look after the brain. And now in Japan, which is pretty much the bleeding edge of everything that is sociological, we've got, you know, there have been sleep. There's been those coffin hotels over there where you crawl inside the hotels. But now there's something else. In Brain Case News, sent to me by Delicatessen 2012. We got, as Hong Kong's already frantic workers cling to their jobs amid global economic downturn, the hectic and the exhausted are now being offered a haven of relaxation in the overcrowded finance hub. Now, this is just twisted to me. This is so lab rat, it's not even funny. One of the ubiquitous shopping malls in the city's most frantic shopping district and Causeway Bay has installed high-tech beds where tired executives and exhausted shoppers can escape the fast lane for a quick snooze. Looking like a futuristic first-class airplane seats, the pods are designed to provide overwrought Hong Kongers with 20 minutes of downtime during which the city's sounds and sights are blanked out in total darkness. Oh, and there's whale music, too. Hong Kong is a really crazy place. You don't have time to rest at all, said Benjamin Lau, founder of Delay No Mall, where the sleep pods are based, and the chief executive officer of the trendy style firm God, G-O-D. Lots of people cannot sleep very well at night, and there's too much stress and pressure. We put all the sleep pods in the mall because we wanted a place where people could relax. Lau said that 90 Hong Kong dollars, 12 US dollars, a nap, the shut-eye is worth the investment. I think there's always a negative connotation of sleeping, and it shouldn't be considered sleeping. It's a place to re-energize, really, the Australian-educated entrepreneur said. According to MetroNaps, a US-based firm which launched a sleep capsule in New York in 2003, the benefits of mid-afternoon nap have proven scientific value. So apparently we already got this going on in the States through MetroNaps, eh? They cite the 2007 study by the Harvard School of Public Health, which found that regular daytime naps can help reduce the disease of heart risk by up to 37%. Angela To, a Hong Kong artist and self-confessed shopaholic, emerged from a reclining bubble-shaped sleep pod and said it provided a welcome break in her hectic retail schedule. I feel relaxed. My mind and breath are calm and peaceful. For me, a good nap is better than a cup of coffee, she said after being gently woken by the bed's vibro alarm. But despite the beneficial claims, one trained unionist argued that a sleep pod is just cashing in on a work-hard culture that blights the overcrowded metropolis. Well, yeah. I think there's demand for sleep pods because Hong Kong workers are suffering from long working hours without enough rest time, said Hong Kong Confederation of Trade Union organizer Tat Mung, who's also a captain of the obvious. The problem is that Hong Kong now, workers do not have any protection for working hours, added Tat from his office in Mong Kok, one of the most densely populated places on the planet. More than 40% of the people working, more than 40% of the working population are working more than 48 hours per week, Tat said. He said a study by the union found Hong Kong workers put the fifth longest working hours in the world behind only Peru, South Korea, Thailand, and Pakistan. The Hong Kong offices of the bank, formerly known as Lehman Brothers, which collapsed in September during the financial crisis, have been taken over by a Japanese financial giant, Nomura. Sorry, Nomura. Employees were also unimpressed. I simply wouldn't have the time, one of the staff members who did not want to be named. If I had one in the office, I think I might think about it, but even then, we're having to work all the hours that God sends. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So, let's just burn our people out, right? Why not just have a burn-and-waste culture? We'll bring them in, get them all juiced up with our crazy jingoist attitudes. You know, the funny thing is there's nothing wrong with training people, you know? I think that if you were to take people, if there was a company you could join and they would, like, ship you off to some island and put you through, you know, their recruitment program. Maybe we call it Paris Island. Maybe if there was a company, you know, you join up when you're young, you get shipped off to this Paris Island place, right? And then, you know, they get you up early in the morning and they make you do physical exercise and they yell at you and they run you around and they kind of tear you down and rebuild you into a person, right? And then you're an employee. And then what you do is you live on these employee-owned high-rises, right? Where you live there and you eat there and you've got, you know, a large restaurant facility that you all eat in. And, yeah, so, you know, and after you get used to that, you'd leave Paris Island and you'd be a Marine and you can, like, go through the rest of your life. I mean, this is what they're going to do. Okay, this is exactly what they're going to do. This is the whole idea. They're going to model this so that they can build the arcologies and have micronations. This is the plan, and we need to be aware of this. We need to see this for what it is, and just be aware of it. Talk about it. Talk about it with people, and just point it out. You know, does this seem crazy to you? 9 times out of 10, you get people coming back to saying, "Yeah, man, I think this is pretty crazy." But wait, as we see that you know, tasers were originally a military thing, just like interrogation drugs and you know, all these subduing drugs and whatever. They were once a military thing. Now they're all being given to cops. Well, now we got a new non-lethal weapon. That's right, you heard it here first. A new non-lethal weapon is being handed out to the cops. The research arm of the U.S. Department of Justice is working on two portable non-lethal weapons that inflict pain from a distance using beams of light or microwaves, with the intention of putting them in the hands of police to subdue subjects. The two devices under development by the Civilian National Institute of Justice both build on knowledge gained from the Pentagon's controversial active denial system, ADS, first demonstrated in public last year, which of course I reported on, and I was saying at the time that this was going to wind up going to cops, and now, sure as shit, here it goes. Which uses a 2-meter beam of short microwaves to heat up the outer layer of a person's skin and cause pain. Like the active denial system, the new portable systems will also heat the skin, but will have beams only a few centimeters across their design to elicit what the Pentagon calls a repel response, a strong urge to escape from the beam, also called agony. A spokesperson for the National Institute of Justice likens the effect of the new devices to that of blunt trauma weapons such as rubber bullets, but unlike blunt trauma devices, the injury should not be present. The research is looking to reduce the injuries of suspects, they say. Existing blunt trauma weapons can break ribs or even kill, making alternatives welcome, yet active denial system has recorded problems too. One of several thousand tests on human subjects were 2 cases of second-degree burns. The NIJ laser weapons have been dubbed the Personnel Halting and Stimulation Response Phasers. I'm not making this up. They actually called it a phaser and resembles a bolty rifle. So they made a phaser rifle, and they're going to give it to the cops. It was created in 2005 by U.S. Air Force Energy to temporarily dazzle enemies. But the addition of a second infrared laser makes it able to heat the skin, too. So, yeah, they're testing the phaser in various scenarios, which may include prison situations as well as law enforcement. And you can bet there's going to be one poor bastard with a red shirt who's not going to make it out of there. Yeah. The NIG's portable microwave-based weapon is less developed. Currently a tabletop prototype with a range less than 1 meter. The backpack-sized prototype with a range of 15 meters will be ready next year. The truly portable mini ADS could prove to be more useful, as microwaves penetrate clothing better than an infrared beam, which is most effective on exposed skin. Although the spokeswoman says, in law enforcement and corrections, there is always a little bit of skin to target. The effect of microwave beams on humans have been investigated for years. There's little publicly available research on the effects of phaser-type lasers on humans. The attraction of using the laser is that it can be less bulky than a microwave device. Human rights groups say the equipment policed with such weapons would add to the problems posed by existing non-lethals such as tasers. Security expert Steve White at Leeds Metropolitan University describes the new weapons as torture at the touch of a button. We have grave concerns about the deployment of use of any such devices, which have the potential to be used for torture or other ill treatment, says Amnesty International's arms controller Helen Hughes, adding that all research into their effects should be made public. Well, just come, you know, just to keep us sure that you're keeping up here, you're not going to have a say. This is what's coming down the pipe, okay? This is why it's very important that you do not let yourself wind up on any lists. You've got to stay low, all right? Take a lesson from the French Resistance here. You're not going to be able to do anything if you go to these protests and get yourself all, you know, videotaped and photo snapped and wind up on a bunch of blacklists. Don't do it, okay? If you want to go against these guys, stay low, all right? There's all kinds of military books you can read to get this stuff down. You know, it's a dangerous time we're living in, guys. It's a scary time. It's going to be up to maybe somebody listening to the show right now. It's going to be the person who makes all the difference in the coming years. That's why we say we need to distribute this information, because this is... Did you know about this? I didn't know about this. But we've got to, like, start looking into groups like the Special Air Service. We got to start looking and reading books about, like, Charlie Beckworth's book on Delta. You know, we have to look at the techniques that are used here, understand they are techniques, begin looking at this thing rather than just Team Cool Guy, and understanding the kind of warning signs and stuff that people are going to be looking for. And it's not even illegal to do this. We're not terrorists. We're the good guys. We're not the bad guys. We're actually, you know, the good guys over here. We don't... Nobody who listens to this program is a terrorist. Nobody who listens to this program is, you know, some Islamic psycho-Christian nutbag who wants to, you know, kill the president. That's not what we're about. What we're about is trying to keep freedom of information going. We're about protecting the kind of things that all decent societies respect. You know, like the Charter of Human Rights and Freedoms. Like the U.S. Constitution. Like these greater ideas we have to try to make our lives and our countries into a better place to be. You know, that's the whole idea here. But, of course, you know, talking like that, that's dangerous talk, Sean, dangerous talk. So some more brain case news here. Of course, there's so much study going into the brain because that's where your soul lives. In brain case news, carbon nanotubes, or hollow microscopic wires made of carbon, may one day replace some of the neurons in your brain. They could repair brain damage or give a turbo boost to healthy brains. A group of researchers in France and Italy have published a paper called today in Nature Nanotechnology that carbon nanotubes can act as neural workarounds in the brain. This is exciting stuff. Forming tight contacts with already existing nerve cells and conducting electricity between them exactly the way that neurons do with each other. According to Henry Markham, lead scientist at the project laboratory of neural microcircuitry in Switzerland, said, the new carbon nanotube-based interface technology discovered together with the state-of-the-art stimulations of brain-machine interfaces is the key to developing all types of neuroprosthetics. Sight, sound, smell, motion, vitong, epileptic attacks, spinal bypass, as well as repairing, even enhancing, cognitive functions. Wow, that's cool. If we use technologies like this to cure Alzheimer's patients, we may wind up with a generation of hyper-intelligent seniors ready to invent the next brain-boosting technology. Yes! Yes! Wire up my head! I want to be immortal! Furthermore, if you could replace all the brains in your neuron with it, that's a cool deal! Because then you just, since it's already synthetic, that will make the complete consciousness transfer just a little bit better! Warm up my Motoko Kusanagi body, I'm going to get me some curvy bits. In Cyberpunk Kit, got a great article here on some lockpicking, which I had to do the other day. Funny enough, I had to lockpick a desk 3 different times. So, you know, I got to look like I was Team Cool Guy. You know, because everyone thinks it's kind of cool when you can pick a lock. You know, you can whistle your Mission Impossible thing. Each year, this is from the article, each year there's more interest in lock sports, or hobby lockpicking, until recently the hobby of lockpicking in much of the world, it's been a solitary pursuit with enthusiasts practicing their skills alone, but that's changing. At technology events, hacker conferences with groups like LockSport, more folks are taking up this challenge as a sport and hobby. This year, Make has put together the only lockpicking gift guide that we know of. Hope you enjoy it. Special thanks to Austin Apple and Doug Farr, the president of LockSport International, who helped putting this lockpicking gift guide together. So, very, very cool. Want to check it out. Good sources for lockpicks. Now, on to the daily hacks. Here's a good one. How to tell if the NSA is tracking you. This is an awesome, awesome thing. I'm sure that many of you heard about the NSA spy scandal. Well, the NSA, along with major ISPs of the countries, have been secretly recording our digital lives. One must know that AT&T customers aren't the only ones apparently being tapped. Transit traffic organizations with one ISP, tested for another, is also being sniffed as if it crosses AT&T's network. Ironically, because the taps are installed at the point at which the network connects to the rest of the world, the safest web surfers are AT&T subscribers visiting websites hosted on AT&T's networks. Their traffic doesn't pass through the splitters. With that in mind, here's the 27B/6 guide to detect if your traffic is being funneled into the secret room in San Francisco's Folsom Street. Very, very cool. Very, very cool. Good to know. And as well, we got a speed camera hack. Whenever a new, relatively unpopular technology hits the streets, you can always count on teenagers to try and exploit it for their own gain. Such is the case with speed cameras, as high school students in Maryland have begun playing the speed camera pimping game, where they attempt to punk the not-so-accurate cameras by creating faux license plates that can be traced back to their peers and teachers they have found out. The trend has parents and law officials worried. It raises even more questions about the camera's usefulness. Students at Richmond Montgomery High School in Maryland have discovered they can duplicate the license plates of arch enemies by printing a Maryland plate template on a sheet of glossy photo paper, digging up a handy license plate font, according to parents speaking to the Sentinel. This may sound like a janky craft project at first, but these cameras are not sensitive enough to pick up the differences between these paper license plate and the real things. The students then tape the faux plates over their own and purposely speed in order to get caught by the speed cameras, causing the real owner of the license plate to receive a $40 citation in the mail. Interesting stuff. Totally illegal, of course, but a good way to, you know, punk people. I thought it was pretty funny, and it goes over how that all happens. Very, very cool. And we got some Recommedia for you today. One of them is the Republican Broadcast Network. It's they got some different ideas and different viewpoints. They got some good survivalist stuff on there. It's all free radio downloads. Make sure you check that out. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you care, please subscribe. $5 a month. That's what we're talking about here. You don't have to do it, but if you think this show is worth $1.25, you want to buy me a beer a month, please, absolutely. Come on, that guy on the street corner didn't do shit for you. If you cannot donate, however, please, this is more important, distribute. Give it out to other people. Give it out, man. Make sure you get it to people who you know. Don't just give it to everybody, okay? Give it to people you like. Hey, man, you know what? Somebody who comes up to you goes, man, the world's fucked. If they ever say something like that, that's like a prime time to be like, yeah, I know. There's a lot of us who know. Here's Newsreel. Check this out. You're not alone. We're all going to get through this together. If you can subscribe, please go to the donate tab on my LiveJournal on the left-hand side. Click there. Or you can send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. Incidentally, I've been using the Trunk Monkey logo. Like, there's a guy, there was an outfit called Trunk Monkey, and then there was Tactical Trunk Monkey, and they used this monkey face. And I'm not too sure who made up the monkey face, because it was floating around before the Trunk Monkey logos was used, but I think that I'd love to see, you know, a patch that we could design for the Army of Flying Monkeys, like a Velcro patch. That would be very, very cool. And if any of you want to join the Army of Flying Monkeys, all you know who you are. You're the regular submitters to this program. You can check me at Newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at RantRadio.com. If you like the music in the background, check out some Psytrance. Good stuff. And I'm going to fade out now with a pretty cool industrial track coming from Happiness Death Squad. The track is called Evil. And remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line. Evil.